Well, you're listening to Wing and a Prayer Radio. Oh, wait a second. No, you're listening to Royalton Community Radio, WFVRLP in South Royalton, Vermont. I am pretty sure that our FM listeners at 96.5 FM can hear us. We're, like most of you, if you're tied to the grid, hey, another good reason to be off-grid. We are experiencing power outages all throughout the town. I was just at the co-op and they lost power, although they had a little backup and I was able to scoot out of there with my transaction. We have changed some cables around to make sure that Henry is coming through. I believe he can hear me right now. Our CD players are not connected to our essential backup power supply, so I won't be playing any CDs. Our studio PC is also not connected there, but I made some changes and we've got some music playing from an alternative source, a little influenza jazz. That's not the sickening influenza. It's just a little influenza jazz from Herbie Mann. This is Green Zine, and we have some recorded material and some good discussion, and I think Henry is guaranteeing a ton of fun as we're getting not quite a ton of snow, but a lot of wet snow, probably up to 6 inches now here in the town of South Royalton. We do want to thank the folks that keep Green Zine on the air, and they include Solaflect. Yeah, that's the moving solar company down in Norwich, Vermont. My good friend Chris Wood, who is the CEO, I don't know if he would ever call himself, I call him the CHB of Bale. You can find out more about this nonprofit in town by going to balevt.org. We also want to thank Tom Wells for his ongoing support of Green Zine and all things community radio. Daniel Leibowitz, don't know, I doubt he's getting any snow down there in Georgetown where he lives outside of, inside of D.C. Thank you, Daniel. The Upper Pass Beer Company, First Branch Coffee Company, just renewing their underwriting support. Solar Fest has a lot of spring work cleanup days going on right now. Find out what they're up to. Maybe you'd like to volunteer and help clean up the new property down there in Brandon, Vermont. Solarfest.org. And last but not least, the White River Land Collaborative. I'm going to let this jazz go a little bit more. The power outage has affected our internal clock, but we do have our EAS up and running, and we have the hybrid. I'll be joined here shortly with Henry Swayze calling in from the Queen City. Brought that down in the mix, and we're going to see. Henry, you out there?
I am.
Look at that.
You sound loud and clear.
Hey, you know, those extra paper clips and rubber band and the ball of twine really came in handy this morning.
Yeah, well, at least we didn't have to deploy the tin cans with the strings.
That's a long string all the way to Burlington. Are you getting much of this snow up there?
We have, where it's fallen on cold surfaces, we have about 4 inches and still snowing pretty hard.
Okay.
Wet snow, beautiful. There's a big willow tree in the yard up here, a really big one. And it is just festooned with snow in a beautiful way, a little lumpy on top where it's piled up, and the rest of it is just stuck to all the branches. And we're having a tiny bit of breeze, so some of it's coming off a few things. But for the most part, it's all sticking to everything. And being in an urban center with lots of underground power and so forth, we kind of don't pay attention to power outages. Any sense of how many people are out in the listening area?
No, I don't know. I know that where I live, there should not be out of power because the batteries were topped off with some of the sunny days we had this week.
Well, you cheat. You aren't hooked to the grid.
Well, there are arguments to be made. If affordable, or if you live in a proper spot, or you're starting something brand new, we're folding that into the cost to have that. I'll just go to this, to the, I won't name the company, but these backup power supplies. And we know there's a big company that starts with the letter T that provides some major backup battery power, where you can actually hit a switch so that you're not getting in trouble with the power company when they're trying to put the power back on, and be grid tied, but also have backup power at home without using a gas generator. So I think a lot of people should be considering that with these kind of conditions. And we know from the last few years that this area of South Royalton and Bethel and down in Sharon over in Tunbridge is one of the more sensitive grid fragile areas in the state of Vermont. And so not surprised, I saw some utility trucks from out of state 2 days ago starting to head to Vermont and to the North Country, knowing that this power outage. As far as locally, over at the co-op, power went out, and it flickered a little bit. I asked Titian over there if they'd had any. He says, well, it went out for a couple seconds earlier, but it was pretty much out. And when I got back to the studio, everything is out, and the Wi-Fi is not working. And I'm not sure we are streaming. If somebody is streaming out there and wants to, well, don't call in, but if you have, if you could email me, actually, if you email to info@royaltonradio.org, or Henry, maybe during Bird Note, I don't want you to lose the phone, but if you have a way of checking the stream, that would be good. But I'm pretty sure we are on FM, and we're carrying on, because during times of I wouldn't say this is really an emergency, but of weather things that affect people's lives, it's great to be able to have community radio on the air and giving people updates. Law school's closed, I can tell you that.
Parking lot's empty, huh?
But you know what? The charger was still working. So there's an interesting thing, that the EV charger, because I do take advantage of, and hey, it's no big secret, there is free EV charging on the campus of the Vermont Law School. So keep that in mind when you get your hybrid or get your EV. Come on over to South Royalton and hang out. But yeah, there are no other cars other than one that was abandoned last night and mine. That's it.
Yeah, well, maybe the solar panels are feeding it directly, or maybe that just seems unlikely. You think they have battery backup?
No, you know, I'd be interested, and just to reflect on a great professor and a great character, and I'm talking about Kevin Jones. He would be the guy, and he unfortunately passed away a month or two ago, while teaching a class here, and was the head of the environmental clinic. And he was the guy that monitored all of what was happening with the chargers, and would be able to tell you, Rita, oh yeah, we've got a separate battery. My sense is that those chargers are tied to the central power supply. They're not, I don't think there's an extra battery that's with that solar panel array that's over by the bridge. But that's just me guessing. And it's possible that there's backup power at the law school, and maybe the backup power is still providing power to the EV chargers.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just checked the stream for the station, and it is down.
It is down. Okay. So you local listeners out there, thanks for listening to Green Zine here. But if you know somebody,
the privileged few.
There might be more than a few. But we should remind people that I'm pretty sure the fact that the automation that brought you Radio EcoShock and will be bringing you Democracy Now! At 12 is functioning off of our backup power supply, and I don't believe that is dependent on the Wi-Fi. Now, live programmers coming in later today, if you happen to be listening, I'll send a note out to everybody. They should be prepared to play CDs. I will make sure that the CD player, if they're planning to count on Wi-Fi to stream their playlists, as of right now, unless this power issue gets resolved, that's not a good idea. And you know what, Henry? On FM, we do not have dead air right now, and that is one of my main objectives in being the station manager, is minimizing FM dead air as much as possible. And currently we're right.
We don't want any more global warming from dead air.
No. And that would even extend to if the power were to go out at our transmitter, and that will take us off the air. And that actually did go off briefly this morning for about 5 minutes at about 7:15. If that power were to go off, I've got four-wheel drive. I'm willing to drive the backup power supply truck and plug it in, and I don't have my skis. I guess I'll just have to trudge through the snow to get home, because that's how important we think community radio is.
Excellent. So let me just say a few words about the program that we're attempting to bring you today?
Yeah, we are.
Sounds as though we're well on our way. You know, sustainable living and the getting life to work right is one of our underlying tenets in Green Zine. Today we're gonna focus on the importance of fun. And how powerful fun is. And I think we get all caught up in the detail. I certainly do, in the detail of this problem with that problem, or we get caught up in the news loop and we continually are chasing the news, trying to get the latest on whatever's going in a political race or the wars or famine around the world or whatever. And they're all things that, for the most part, we can't do anything about. And yet we take up our lives with that. And there's a freeing thing about having fun. And so I've pulled a couple things together for this show that are my inputs, starting off with Bird Note and how to have fun while you're paying attention to birds. So I don't know if you're able to make that happen, but maybe we should go to that.
I'm going to give it a shot, Henry. I'm going to pull you down in the mix, and I think we will have Bird Note in just a moment. Just to remind folks, you are listening to Royalton Community Radio's Storm Watch Radio here from Free Vermont Radio. And we're going to go to Bird Note now. I'm juggling a few things, but I think we can do this. I'm going to bring Henry down. I'm going to bring this mic up, and we'll hit Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. The board game Wingspan came out this year to a lot of buzz. The bird-themed game won the most prestigious award in board games and has been almost continuously sold out or backordered since it launched. Players say the game is fun, but it's also having a surprising impact. Josh Ward has loved board games for years, but he never really cared about birds before he heard about Wingspan. His wife had a feeder in the backyard, but now...
We've added more feeders since playing Wingspan, and I've been noticing house wrens and goldfinches and cardinals and all these other birds coming around that we never got before. In the last year, we've picked up a couple of field guides that are sitting on the kitchen table so we can look outside and say, oh, what's that?
And on the flip side, it's also gotten birders hooked on board games. Take Adam Wilson.
I hadn't really played board games for a number of years, probably even close to a decade.
But when he heard about Wingspan, he had to try it.
It's really opened my eyes to a whole new world of games.
You can hear the full story about Wingspan on our podcast, Bird Note Presents, or on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mark Bramhill. For more great stories, check out the podcast Today Explained from the Vox Media Podcast Network. Host Sean Ramisvaram picks one essential news story each day and sits down with some of the world's best journalists, academics, and policymakers to help us understand it. Subscribe to it for free in your favorite podcast app.
All right. A successful Bird Note, Henry.
So that game has been out. That podcast is from 2021, maybe. It's an old podcast. So that game is out, and it's been updated multiple times. So I think still available. And it teaches you, it's a game which doesn't have any gotchas to it. It's all about building on what you know and interlacing the ecology of the way birds work. And there is a 5-minute podcast which I will put in show notes, which walks you through how the game is actually played and gives you a more hands-on feel for it than this reveling. But I realize I don't play board games hardly ever. I as a kid played them lots, and the family that I've kind of married into are very avid board games, and they'll buy a new board game and try it out, and 4 months later they're trying another one, and they do board games, and I'm reluctant to do board games, but when I get into a board game with them, a good one, I discover that we have lots of fun, that it's a melting pot of people enjoying themselves together and with the task of manipulating the board game. And it's, you come away from it feeling, oh, well, that was fun. And so that's kind of thinking about, when did you last have fun? And there's a woman who's written a book on this. And we have if Todd's on top of it or can make it happen, we have a recording of her being interviewed, talking about her book and the research that she did on fun. And can we go to that, Todd?
Fast-forwarded through the ad, Henry, but that's okay. I just caught that. I was just checking it out online, and online by
TED Talk. Yeah, I had no ad in mind. So
yeah,
I
didn't. You know, you got to watch out. They're pretty sneaky out there. And just to remind people, if you're catching this radio and you're wondering what do these folks do with that radio station? They don't do advertising. No, we don't. We have underwriting, and we've had a lot of recent renewal of underwritings. We have membership, and then we also participate in some special events that occasionally get us some compensation. So we do not play ads, and we're very happy to bring you more content and more music. And Henry, I think I've got the guests lined up. I see two faces on here, and
yes,
just going to scroll it up, and I'm going to bring you down and bring it up, this little TED Talk about having fun, and fun is always fun. Here we go.
I found it really interesting in my research to realize that the way we use fun in our everyday speech, which at least in English is very casual, we kind of toss around this word. It's really different from the feeling you get from people if you ask them about a memory from their own lives in which they had the most fun. And as part of the research for my book, I did that. I asked people from all around the world. I see we have a ton of people from all around the world, even in this webinar. So the answers I got were very international. And it was really interesting because even though obviously people's individual experiences were different, there was this energy running through them that was very much the same. And when I read through these answers, and I've got thousands of these by now, I found myself smiling, but also almost tearing up a lot of times. There was something really powerful about what people were sharing with me that went way beyond this lighthearted pleasure sense with which we often use the word. So I ended up coming up with a definition based on these stories people were sharing with me and then running it by them to see if it accurately described what they had told me. So I tried to validate it. And it is that when we have these moments of what I think of as true fun, it's the confluence of three states. And those are playfulness, connection, and flow. And so if you think of a Venn diagram with three circles, in the center you have true fun, and then you have playfulness, connection, and flow. And just to clarify, because people can, you know, freak out in particular about playfulness, adults really get uncomfortable with playfulness. It means just having a lighthearted attitude. You can just be lighthearted, not care too much about the outcome of what you're doing, let go of your perfectionism. Connection refers to having a special shared experience. And I do think some people can have fun on their own, as I say in my TED Talk, but it was really interesting because most of the stories people told me involved other people. And when I asked people, what surprised you about what you just told me? A number of people said something along the lines of, I'm an introvert, but everything I just told you involved other people. So in the majority of situations, another person is involved. And then flow is this psychological state where we get so wrapped up in what we're doing, actively engaged in what we're doing, that we can lose track of time. So an athlete playing a game is the most quintessential example. All three of those states are great on their own, but I believe when you experience all three at once, that's what I call true fun.
So to the adult question of why we lose playfulness, well, I think some of it is because fun can seem maybe frivolous in a very serious world, and the world is quite serious. But why is it important to have fun?
Thanks for asking that question, David, because that is a common misperception people have about fun, is that it is frivolous, or that, you know, if there's so many serious things going on in the world, how can we possibly think about fun? So a couple of things I would say to that. First of all, life is not zero sum, so I don't see why you can't be someone who cares about the serious issues in the world and also cares about fun. And also, a lot of what we do when we say we're caring about serious issues is really kind of meaningless and just torturing ourselves. If you read the same news article that makes you upset six times in an hour, you haven't actually helped anybody. And the same thing if you've posted a rant on social media or gotten in an argument or just worked yourself up or essentially yelled at someone on Twitter. That didn't actually help anybody, and it's very draining. So what I find about fun is that when we actually have fun, so my point being here is that fun can actually help us work to solve some of those problems. And the reason I say that is that, first of all, when you have enough fun yourself, it actually fills up your own reserves. It builds your resilience and your energy. And that will give you the energy to do something more productive than just yell at people via your phone's social media, you know, accounts. But then also, if you actually have fun with other people and you've connected with them as human beings, so if we're able to have fun with each other, we can connect in a way that then helps us work together to actually solve some of those problems. And then I would also say fun isn't frivolous. Even if the world was great and there weren't any problems, fun itself is not frivolous, because fun, and I'm happy to go into more detail if anyone wants more detail, but is actually really important, not just for our mental health, but also for our physical health, because of the way it reduces our stress levels and also provides us with a sense of social connection.
Yeah, fun is good for your health. I think that's the important thing to remember. But as you pointed out, we shouldn't get too wrapped up maybe in anxiety about whether we're having enough fun. You also talk about something called fake fun. What's that?
So fake fun is a term I came up with to describe products and services that are marketed to us as fun, but that aren't actually fun, in the sense that they don't actually produce playfulness, connection, or flow. The biggest culprit here is definitely social media and kind of these, or you know, watching passive consumption past the point of enjoyment. So if you're watching your favorite show for a couple episodes, great. But if you're like in that zone where you're actually completely hypnotized and it's 7 hours have passed and you feel disgusting about yourself and your life, you've fallen into the trap of fake fun. So I see it as there being actually three categories. You've got true fun, the playful connected flow. You've got fake fun, which is essentially the junk food of our leisure time that ends us, it's very appealing, but it leaves us feeling disgusting about ourselves. There's a big middle category of stuff that's truly enjoyable, but that wouldn't necessarily qualify as true fun by the definition I've proposed. And that would be things like reading, you know, or like taking a bath or watching your favorite TV show up to the point where it's still enjoyable. To me, those are all legitimate great uses of your leisure time, even if they're not fun, because you know you actually enjoy them. And the reason I think it's important to to think so intellectually about fun is that it helps us become much more intentional about how we use our leisure time. So if you're able to identify sources of fake fun in your life, it's actually really easy to eliminate those once you kind of cognitively recognize that you know it's a waste of time. And if you're like, oh yeah, this is actually enjoyable, go for it. And then if it's likely to generate true fun, I would suggest putting it on the top of your priority list, because it's such a wonderfully nourishing state.
TED member Don and Stefania are you know, feel slightly overwhelmed by their lives and have trouble even thinking of what fun feels like. If you've forgotten what fun feels like, how do you find it again?
One of the things I recommend people do to start is to think back on a moment of true fun from your own life, a moment that you describe as, quote, so fun. That was the term I came up with when I was asking people this question. Don't worry, it can actually take a little bit of time to tune into those experiences, but I can assure you we've all had them. They don't need to be dramatic. This is another misconception we have about fun, that it only can happen in exotic locales or when you're somehow outside of your, quote, normal life, or that it costs a lot of money. None of that is true. If you define it as playful connected flow, you'll start to recognize that you can have even tiny moments of fun all the time. And the reason you want to call to mind one of these experiences is that as you begin to think of more of them. So I encourage you to try to think of more than one, and it will become easier as you start thinking of them, to call out some themes and see, are there any particular people who are often involved? Are there any activities that are involved? Are there any settings that seem conducive to fun? Because if you've seen my TED talk, you know that I believe that fun is a feeling and it's not an activity, by which I mean that I think too often we start to think, like if I asked you guys what's fun just at the beginning of this conversation, you might start to give me a list of activities that you enjoy. It's like cooking's fun or reading's fun or whatever. But the activity itself is not fun. It's the feeling of fun. Like you can love dinner parties and have the exact same group of people over for dinner and eat the exact same thing. And one night it's going to be really fun and one night it's not going to be fun. So it's the feeling that results. So the point of calling out these settings and these people and these activities that are often associated with fun for you is not to guarantee that you can have fun if you're with them, but to set the scene for it, to make it more likely that fun will occur and result. I think about it like romance. Like you can set the scene for it, but if you try too hard, it's going to run away, right? So we're trying to light candles for fun. But I call the settings and the people and the activities our fun magnets. And each of us has a collection that is unique to us. You know, my husband's fun magnets are not necessarily the same as mine. We have some that we share. We have some that are different. And the point is just to become more cognizant of what those things are. So again, you can become more intentional about how you choose to spend your leisure time. I also created a whole acronym in the book and like a framework that's called SPARK, which I'm happy to go through, but I'll just end up talking straight for half an hour if I go down that route. So David, you can choose. But I'd start with that. Try to identify past memories of fun, call out or look for themes, and then prioritize those people and activities and settings.
Well, let's talk about SPARK a little bit, because in looking through the chat, I mean, that's why we ask for the moments of delight. It's a moment for people to reflect and think about something that was probably pretty fun. If it delighted you, it was probably pretty fun. So tell us a little bit more about the importance of noticing and this whole SPARK method.
So the first step in SPARK, the S, actually stands for make space, because we do need to clear out some space for fun. If you're feeling constantly overwhelmed, you're probably going to feel like you can't even begin this process. What I recommend that people start with in terms of clearing space is to begin with the biggest source of distraction for most of us these days, which is our phones and our digital devices. Before the pandemic, the average person was spending, in America, was spending upwards of 4 hours a day just on their phones. So not their tablets, not their computers, not their TVs, just their phones, which is a quarter of your waking life. And it adds up to 60 full days a year. When you think about it that way, like sure, some of that time is useful and productive and perhaps essential, but there's also a lot of it that's just a kind of frittering away of time, the fake fun that we're talking about. And if you're able to create better boundaries with your devices and what more of what I call screen life balance, you're gonna end up with more free time that you then can devote towards pursuing fun. So another way to create space is actually to think about your commitments and see which ones you could say no to. Like for example, I used to volunteer on my daughter's preschool board. And then at some point I'm like, the school's fine. I'm not adding to it and I'm not enjoying the meetings. And so I quit and it cleared up a lot of space. Also giving yourself a permission slip is huge in terms of making space. Mm. A lot of people think that they don't deserve fun, that there are too many other priorities.
Well, Henry, fun may have come to a temporary halt here at Green Zine.
Yes. Well.
I don't know why. Maybe. You know what? We've got other, I would say other internet connectivity problems are spreading, so that my service provider that I was relying on that had some solid bars is now showing the SOS signal.
Their battery backup has run out.
I would say, but you know, I was just checking the meters, and this is interesting to go through this weather event where power is probably and we are sympathetic. If this power were to stay out for hours and hours, or even into tomorrow, it has serious implications. So I don't mean to make fun of it, but you know, having the resiliency that at the moment here in the studio, we have some resiliency. I believe our broadcast is probably still happening out there. And the phone line is tied up, so anybody trying to get a hold of me to say that it's working or not working won't work. But I wouldn't necessarily say going through this exercise is fun, Henry, but that guest, I didn't catch her name. It might be here on the screen. She makes a lot of good points.
So
okay, yeah. Let's talk about
it. Catherine Price.
Yeah.
And she did this extensive piece of research and then wrote a book, which she has done further books since then. This is from a year and a half ago or so. And the name of the book is The Power of Fun. And when the Internet's functioning again, I will post this information on our GreenZine link. And I have so what I was hearing, she says playfulness, connection, and flow. And the playfulness is, yeah, so let's do something that isn't deadly serious. And the connectedness is connection to friends or people. The flow is you have to get lost in the event. You have to actually have the event take over and shut out the rest of the world. And I have a snow story that's like that, or two of them actually. When I first moved to Vermont, my brother and sister-in-law, Townsend and Felicity, came up to Vermont for a couple of years in a row to have Christmas at our farmhouse. And we had a power outage. And it was a power outage that went on. And we got the kerosene lights out. And we said, well, let's play a game. And we got out a game of Mahjong. And we played Mahjong for about 3 or 4 hours, and had giggles over it, and did it, you know, a little bit of probably a little alcohol around the edge of some kind, eggnog, but it was Christmas time, and we sat warm by the fire with nothing but our kerosene light and the snow piling up outside and shut off from the rest of the world. And that was before the days of internet, so that wasn't even an option. But we, once the electricity blinked out, that was the end of anything. And that was a fun event because we were in the flow, we were lost in the event, and we had people that we enjoyed being with, and we made it playful. And I have another snow story, and this is ancient history. Today is my birthday, so I'm 84 today.
Well, Henry, stop right there. Happy birthday to Henry, everybody. And I hear a big clapping. We celebrated an 82nd birthday for Carl Newman yesterday. And here, the very next day, another octogenarian. Way to go.
Yes. Well, there we are.
Yep.
And so I was up and kicking in 1947, and
yeah, you were kicking.
7 years old at that point, and I remember the blizzard of 47 in Manhattan. We lived on up on a high story in a building that we could look down on the streets, especially 85th Street, which was not a main drag. It was a secondary street. And that blizzard dumped 4 feet of snow in about 36 hours.
Whoa.
On Manhattan. And Manhattan, very much like the power being out in Tunbridge on that Christmas time, just was shut down.
Yeah.
There was continued to be electricity, but there was no traffic moving. There was no sound. There was no tugboats on the river weren't making noise. The ambulances weren't going. There was no traffic noise. There was no snow plows. everything, at least in our neighborhood, was silent. And it was enough snow, so looking out on the cars parked along the street, you could not tell where the cars were in relationship to one another. And what happened, which was the fun thing, was people came out of their shell. Instead of all being businesslike, people were out there on the street with their skis and skiing in the streets in Manhattan.
Yeah, you know, the term they often use today is a flash mob. That was like a spontaneous community flash mob. Total strangers coming out on the street and just changing what they're going to do. Yep.
And instead of being all businesslike, people were very friendly to each other. And it just was a heartwarming experience to see the rush turned off and the let's pause and enjoy this turned on.
Yeah. Yeah, there, I'll tell a quick snow story that has to do with, the thing about, like, during that big snowstorm in Manhattan in 47, there was a lot of human energy, people coming out and skiing and getting the sleds and their saucers and visiting with each other. But as far as using a lot of energy, well, just think, no vehicles moving. There wasn't really much gas or oil being burned while all that snow was there. Where I used to live for a brief while in Chester County, Pennsylvania, there was a major snowstorm. And one thing that really bothered me, I love the old house that I lived in, but right through the woods, probably 150 yards away, was a major four-lane highway, an east-west road, actually known as one of the first highways in Pennsylvania, the Lincoln Highway, Route 30. And the sound of cars was constant. During the day or rush hour, definitely. But even in the middle of the night, a truck, a car, you would always, even though we lived kind of on a rural property, you would always hear cars. Well, the big snow came, and I walked outside and was enjoying the snow, and I realized I don't hear any cars. There was enough snow that they had not plowed that four-lane highway. I walked through the woods, and I don't know if I built a snowman on the northbound lane or not, but I had some fun, a rare time when that highway was completely shut down and things were very, very quiet. So that, to me, was some fun. It inconvenienced a whole lot of other people, but it was definitely fun.
Yeah. So I have another fun story. So I'm on two or three boards and things like that. And we have business meetings, sometimes in person, frequently on Zoom. And the Vermont Healthy Soils Coalition board meetings, always, it's a group of people that we've been working together for long enough, so we know each other pretty well. And we always start off meetings with a go around about how we're feeling, what our life is like, and it sets the stage for being able to relax and do work and know kind of where people are at, and it makes a very productive meeting. And you come away from that meeting, especially if you do a sum up at the end and say, okay, so how did we do at this meeting? Did we amount to anything? Did we get something done we're pleased with? And when you put those bookends on a meeting, it becomes fun, even though it's a serious endeavor. If we have an hour and a half meeting, we frequently spend 20 minutes of that on the go-around, and it's only 5, 6, 7 people. It's not a great number of people. So that's another way to do serious stuff and to make it more life-supporting, make it more less frustrating and more feel like that you're part of something that gives you pleasure and can even call fun to be part of.
Yeah, well, to go back to the birthday theme and a quote from the woman, and I thought maybe the reception was coming back on that TED Talk, but it apparently not. She was saying, creating an environment or an atmosphere where the chances of fun heighten. I mean, there's a better chance of fun, you know, coming along. Lighting candles for fun. So, you know, we lit a candle last night for Carl, and we're doing a symbolic candle for you today, Henry.
I hope you get all 84 and get them blown out in one fell swoop.
Oh, no, be careful, although I know you've got good cardiovascular stuff. We are having some fun, just to remind people. We got about 18 minutes left in the show. Henry, how about if we take a brief music break, because I do have something queued up that will work. Maybe the internet will come back, but you know what? I think we're going to be able to survive Green Zine without the internet.
Yes.
So something else.
I have a number of things that I can feed in still that get a little more wonky and a little less.
Yeah, and we do
fun,
when
but
we
they're fun wonkiness.
Yeah, and you know when we come back, we definitely want to touch on a big day that's coming up, and that's Monday, and we have an update on the weather forecast for that. And right now,
I have a fun piece about that too.
Yeah, all right, we're going to bring up a little music. Henry will be back with us in just a couple minutes. See if you recognize this song, this tune. This is your community radio station, Royalton Community Radio. And since we like to play music even during a public affairs show like this, Henry, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but can you name that tune?
I cannot.
You cannot?
Definitely not.
Are you familiar with a guy named Bob Dylan?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't recognize that as Bob Dylan. And the lo-fi presentation that at least I was getting on my cell phone makes it sound almost so it's not on an electric guitar, but on maybe a an oud or a...
It's a pretty different guitar there. That is a group called Medeski, Martin, and Wood, and that is their version of Bob Dylan's Mr. Tambourine Man.
And, oh, wow.
And the first couple minutes, the melody was not there, but then it kicked in. I really enjoy that
album.
Yeah,
I guess I did hear that at the tail end. Now that you mentioned that, you give me the clue as to what it is. I like the feel of it. I like the sound of it. It's mellow.
Yeah. Well, we like jazz. We play a bit of jazz. And actually, this is a shout out. If you are a jazz aficionado, you have a great jazz collection, and you're wondering, hey, how can I get a jazz show on Royalton Community Radio? Just drop us a line at info@royaltonradio.org. We've had some great jazz shows in the past. The Reverend Allagash Bill Murphy did Fourth Branch Jazz. We do carry a syndicated show by a colleague down in Pennsylvania. It's called Blue Dimensions, and of course the second half of tonight's Wood Warblers Jazz Grass Show. So basically, starting at 10 o'clock is all jazz. But let's move on from the jazz to some more fun. Henry, you said you had a number of other items, and I want to remind folks real quick. This story is in the Herald, the White River Valley Herald. We should all be supporting our local media, whether it's community radio like this station, whether it's our daily paper, the Valley News, and certainly the towns that are covered most expertly in our immediate Upper White River watershed are serviced by the White River Valley Herald. And if you would like to support them more, go to their website. And if you look at their website in the upper right corner, you'll see a tab that'll show you how you can support this weekly paper. All right, back to you, Henry.
Yeah, so we've got the solar eclipse coming up.
We do.
And one of the things that happens if you're in an area where you are going to actually be in totality, where the sun is blocked out by the moon, and you'll see only the parts of the sun that are not the major part of the sun, but the edges of the sun. And that's where solar flares and coronal mass ejections happen.
Wow.
And we are in an active sunspot cycle, which means that there is a reasonably large amount of flare happening, and the potential for a mass ejection. And the mass ejection are big burps of sun material that spurt out quite a ways from the sun, maybe a quarter or eighth of its diameter. And if you are got your dark glasses and are looking at the sun, even with the naked eye, at that point of totality, you will probably see that little halo around the edge, which are the solar flares. And I believe you can put a pair of binoculars to your glasses, the glasses on, and actually look at that in a little more detail. But the sun's a pretty big disk, so even the naked eye will allow you some view of that. So now, just for the fun part of this, it turns out that there is work in Norway, I believe it is. Let me pull up this. Yeah, here we are. Finnish in Finland, where they've been monitoring that that electricity usage during the coldest weather is not always the highest.
Uh-huh.
And they tried to sort out what was going on, because you'd think cold weather would get you, but it's all about the aurora borealis. And that's the magnetic field in our Earth that is picking up activity from solar flares on the sun. And so with this active sunspot cycle, I haven't heard of any aurora borealis being visible in Vermont, but it turns out that it actually makes the planet somewhat warmer when the aurora borealis is at work. And in Finland, they got a 14% reduction in electricity usage. So maybe we got to cheer on solar flares and sunspots and help us with our energy needs. I thought that was a fun tie-in of the geeky stuff.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's a punk band or maybe a heavy metal band that might be named the Auroral Mass Ejections, but we'll have to look around for that. I'm getting reports we might be off the air, we might be on the air, but those of you who can hear us, I'm pretty sure that this show is being captured by our Audio Hijack software, which is plugged into our backup power supply. So if the show has been kind of going in and out, I'm relatively confident that once power and internet are restored everywhere, whenever that is going to be, after this storm settles down, that you'll be able to catch the replay of Green Zine starting early tomorrow morning and going forth from there. Henry, I'm looking at the front page of the Herald and seeing that at the moment, as of yesterday, a meteorologist for Vermont Digger is predicting that there is a pretty good chance there are some clouds up until 2 p.m. on Sunday. I'm on Monday, the April 8th. And it sounds like some other places that are normally sunny at this time of year on April 8th that are in the path of totality may have a lot more clouds than Vermont does. So that means even more people might be showing up here if they don't have their reservations already. Henry, where are you going to go to try to catch the total eclipse?
I am probably going to do it from the backyard right here in Burlington.
Yeah, no traffic issue there.
Burlington sounds like it's going to be total gridlock. They have shut down a lot of major streets. I don't know where they're forecasting they'll have between 60,000, which would double the Burlington population, or as much as 150,000 people in Burlington. And I don't know where they're we'll have to find. It would sort of be interesting to take my bike and walk and bike around and try and figure out what they did with all the cars, because I just can't imagine there being parking space for enough people, even if they come two and three per car. So that's Burlington, and I think Stowe is getting the same treatment because it's a destination that people think of as being a beautiful place to go and be at. And I would like to get to Tunbridge, but I think the snow that you're getting now probably will block me from doing that. It'd be fun to take my telescope back to Burlington so that I could be looking at that corona around the edge of the sun during the totality.
Yeah.
But I'll live without that. I have a pair of binoculars. That'll just be good enough.
Yeah, that'll definitely be good.
So I have another kind of, what should I say, oh my gosh, think of that kind of story, which is puts it over into the semi-fun category, or certainly a positive note, and that is from Future Energy Times, Future Energy News by Integrity Research. Their lead story for this last month is our best discovery in many years could be called best energy news of the century. With the universal need for clean energy, hydrogen, which when burned produces only water vapor, has consistently seemed to be just out of reach for so many reasons until now. Tons of hydrogen from out of the ground almost seems too good to be true. The U.S. Geological Survey suggests that trillions of tons may be available as geological hydrogen, called white or gold since simply requires drilling. Now the U.S. DOE agrees that an investment and has made an investment of $20 million for research in mining and Eden Geopower is the leader in this effort, stimulating geological hydrogen. So so basically, there is energy that has, you know, probably some pollution for drilling a hole, but after that is a non-polluting force. And hydrogen, when it burns, you think of well, hydrogen when it's burned can make a very hot flame. And so that green hydrogen could be used for things like steel making, replacing coal in steel making. And not all geological areas have the right materials to tap into this. So there will probably be hubs. And it also can be converted into electricity and moved around if we could figure out how to get our long-distance transmission worked up. Currently, transmitting energy from one part of the country to another is not an easy task. Doesn't happen automatically.
No, definitely does not.
And one of the things that's happening is that the money, again, that the Biden administration has on the table is to industrialize, and we mentioned this last week, to industrialize, bring manufacturing back into the United States. And there's actually not enough electricity in many, many places to do that. And the other thing that's happening is that with artificial intelligence happening, there is a tremendous uptick in demand for data centers that are working with that artificial intelligence. And it probably has its downsides, but it also has its upside, and it's going to happen, and it's going to require a great deal more electricity.
Yeah, it's so, sort of like a little bit like the servers that that handle Bitcoin, a number of transactions that happen there. Maybe a future show or future show guest, Henry, could be someone discussing the pros and cons of AI and power usage and the, you know, future of the environment here, climate change. How will AI help us combat that? How will it maybe contribute to that as well? As I said, my
good podcast on it. I'm not sure I can find someone intelligent who will come on Greenfield, but I'll attempt to do that.
Oh, well, can you find someone stupid that will come on? No, we wouldn't do that. But all right, I am now. I'm able to see my phone, which is providing a little bit of more Mr. Tambourine Man. I'm pretty sure that Democracy Now! Will come on. Henry, I think we're broadcasting to an audience of two at the moment. That would be you and me. I believe power is out at the transmitter. But for those who are listening to the rebroadcast, you might be having fun saying, what are those guys doing? There's nobody listening. Well, I think on the replay and the rebroadcast, that will be there.
We have faith in that people will come and check us out after the fact.
Yeah.
So we've got a minute.
Yeah, a minute to go.
2 minutes to go.
Okay, go for it if you've got something else.
No, I want to comment that they need checking in with, but there is the Woodstock film series.
Yes,
tonight
at 5:30, the Advanced Vermont Natural Resources Council, VNRC.org, to get an update on whether that film series, but hopefully it is going to happen. It starts at 5:30 with a reception, and at 6:30, they roll out the films. Thanks for mentioning that. Green Zine is brought to you today by Solaflect, Bale, Royal Trailworks, Daniel Leibowitz, Upper Pass Beer Company, First Branch Coffee Company, Solarfest, and the White River Land Collaborative. Thanks, Henry. Talk to you next week.
Good to visit with you.
All right. Bye-bye.